Hey, everybody, you're listening to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, where we are here, myself and my co-host Clay, to talk Green Lantern, Earth One. What's up, buddy?
I am super excited to talk about this because we literally just said that we both only had read this once, and this is our second time reading it. I really dug it for what it was. For this being an Earth One, and I know I kind of went on a soapbox on Twitter, yesterday? So I'm pretty excited about talking about this.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we'll go more further into detail in regards to, like, this book, and we'll kind of, like, break it down and just discuss it. But, I mean, I've been on record several times. It's one of those stories where I still believe, like, in my heart that Superman Earth One is my favorite.
Yeah.
But volume one of Superman Earth One.
Okay. Yeah,
But I will say that I believe that the reason why I kind of put Earth One over it of Green Lantern is not so much, I mean, I really enjoyed the story, but I think it's just that this is the one true book that has lived to the promise of what Earth One was supposed to be, which are retellings, like re-imagings, like a different scope. Like, we have the character that we know and we love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll have core elements of why you love this character, but it's supposed to be something completely different, or at least feel different.
Yeah.
And this did a great job of giving me something completely different while when reading the other books. Now, I was chatting with Jim from the Weird Science podcast, and I mean, I told him that the only book I've never read in Earth One is Wonder Woman, mainly because I get scared of
diving into
Grant Morrison stuff. but he told me that it is like the least Grant Morrison-y stuff that he's ever done.
I would agree.
For Jim to say a book is awesome, I feel like it is a disservice if you don't read it, because he is, well, you know, there's no sugarcoating. I mean, he is very critical, but he's honest. He doesn't give you fluff reviews, but he's very critical on books, and which I appreciate. So when he said it, I mean, I immediately went on Amazon and I bought it because I really want to read it.
Nice.
Because I've been enjoying this, so I'm looking forward to it. I don't remember who the artist is, but I'm pretty sure looking at the cover, that was like Yannick Paquette.
I believe so.
Yeah, because they've done a lot of stuff together on Batman Inc. But whatever, we're talking Green Lantern Earth One today, done by Gabriel Hardman, who I've been like slowly becoming a huge fan of his. Not only because, you know, reading this book, which I really enjoyed, but I have really been, I don't know if you've ever read like in the Dark Horse, like the Alien stuff.
I have never read an actual Alien comic.
Okay. Yeah, he's got, I think it's like a, he's done several volumes, I believe. But the most recent one I just finished reading, it's called Alien Dead Orbit. And it's, I believe, I don't remember, but I think it was like four to six issues.
I believe it was four issues. I remember the title for when I was working at the comic shop. Yeah.
Okay. And it's awesome. Like, I love it. I love his art style. And this is also joined by Karina Becco and Jordan Boyd. To me, this book is a hit. There are certain things that I'm like, obviously, I prefer more of the canon version of what we get in the Green Lantern Corps. But I find this to be an absolutely fascinating tale. And I'm glad you dig it, too.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, when I first picked this up, of course, I fell in love, same with you, with Superman Volume 1, and then I was just waiting for Volume 2, then Batman came out, then Teen Titans came out, then, the Volume 2 for each of those came out, then Volume 3 with Superman, and then, you know, that's when the Wonder Woman came out, and I was like, okay, let's try it, you know. The cover art was very different compared to everything else that was coming out for Earth One. So I was like, okay, you know, we'll try it out. And this was you know, I wasn't really diving too much into Grant Morrison, so I was just like, eh, okay, whatever. I really enjoyed it. Probably not as much as everything else, but reading Green Lantern, I would say from the moment you open the book to the moment that Hal Jordan wakes up with Kilowog, like in the laboratory.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy crap. Like, this is... It genuinely felt like something more than just a DC comic, you know?
Absolutely.
It was out there. The concept of just the whole thing with the Green Lantern ring really reminded me of, I don't know if you've read the actual Geoff Johns story of Green Lantern Rebirth when Hal Jordan comes back to life.
Yeah, we're talking about 1 year later. Like, post-Infinite Crisis.
Yes.
Like, this is after... Yeah, of course.
So...
That was the beginning of everything.
Yeah, there's a part in there with Green Arrow where he puts on the ring and he describes how much actual willpower it takes to create a construct, right? And how it, like, takes up all of his energy... It, like, wears him out, and all he did was shoot one literal green construct out of the ring. So it was tiny, and it, like, wore him out. And I very much got that from when Hal Jordan puts on the ring for the first time and is trying to fight that giant Manhunter that just comes out of nowhere to, like, mess him up. And he doesn't know what he's doing. He... is just saying, oh, well, you know, Volkov did this without even thinking, so maybe I can do something. And that's when you see the giant bursts of energy. And so, like, I always thought, you know, the idea of the Manhunters is something very interesting. You know, the whole story of, oh, the Guardians created them, and... It's changed. Like, the story of the Manhunters have changed over the years, whether it be that they were made before the Lanterns or if they were made after the Lanterns. That's always been kind of wherever. But I do like it here. You know, making a policed galaxy and, like, enslaving them. Really, really cool.
No, it truly does. And I agree with you that the moments of where you see Hal Jordan fighting the Manhunter for the first time, and he does defeat him, to the point where we get down to, you know, he finally meets Kilowog, and we find out that Kilowog was the one that saved him at that time, because you never really knew what was the aftermath after, like, that huge blow to that Manhunter.
Yeah.
I would say that the story, the pace of the story was really fast. It's one of those that I was like, man, I forgot how much the first time I read it, how quickly I was reading this book, because a book is good when you're reading it fast, but you're still excited about it. There's like a difference between reading books quickly and you're wanting it to finish. This one was just getting me more excited while reading it because it's funny because I actually forgot on how easily transferable like the ring is here.
Yeah.
Like, in this story. I forgot about that.
And with the ring here, it doesn't have a program in the ring or a mechanism in the ring to find somebody worthy.
Yes. Like, a worthy successor of the previous Lantern.
Yeah. So that's why when we see Abin Sur for the very first time, he's dead with the ring on his finger. And then... it happens near the very end, and we'll get to it later, but there is another Lantern that dies, and Hal just takes the ring and gives it to somebody later.
Yes, where he gives it to a little girl.
Yeah. But the whole concept of, like, Kilowog training to be, you know, training Hal to be a better Lantern, to learn, Because Hal says, you know, I am on my planet, I am a pilot. And in order to be a pilot, I need to learn every little thing that I can about the machine that I am working with. This is a machine.
Which I love that.
Yeah.
I love that he's that smart where instead of doing something so reckless, it's kind of like I love the analytical process that, you know, he's not as reckless and kind of like the Maverick that we know and love in the canon.
Yeah.
This seems more that he is one of those that thinks and he processes things before. And there are moments that you do get to see like the awesome version of Hal that we do love and adore. But I love the different aspects and character because I actually had to do a little bit of a research because in this one, we always hear Jordan, but it's always Harold Jordan.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at who Harold Jordan is, Harold Jordan is actually from Earth 3. But that Earth 3 version of Green Lantern, he's like a coward.
Oh, really?
But, yes, but what I did not know is that in the canon, Harold is actually Hal's like real name. So he's actually Harold Hal Jordan.
I did not know that until I read this book. I genuinely didn't.
No, because I was having... I was like, wait a second, this can't be the dad. I'm pretty sure the dad's name is Martin.
Yeah.
So I actually had to like Google to make sure that I'm not going crazy
here. Look at you, Mark, doing some background research. That's awesome.
You see that? This is investigative journalism. So yes, I wanted to do that research. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, look at this. Okay, so Harold Jordan, Earth 3, dude's a coward. But I don't know if this is kind of like Richard Grayson, but Dick is like the short. I don't know if Hal is kind of like the nickname for Harold. So maybe this might be a creative choice.
Yeah.
That instead of just having it be like, oh, Hal Jordan, although it is, it's kind of like you're just throwing a different name out there. So I liked even that. It's a subtle change, but I liked it.
Yeah.
Because it kind of made me feel, even though this is Hal Jordan, it's presented differently. So that's something I like. I also like the fact that the Kilowog that we're seeing in this story is not that general, I am the trainee,
hey,
I am the
poozer.
Guy. Yes, no poozer. No, this dude's a scientist. He's like a doctor, an architect.
And very skittish. He is not the one that is like ready for battle. That's always, you know, the Kilowog.
Have you ever played Mass Effect?
Yes.
Who, I don't remember, but remember like those really the fat slugs looking things?
I am so mad right now because I just remembered the very last time I played Mass Effect, I accidentally killed him.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Hold on, I need a...
He's my favorite character in that first Mass Effect. And I...
Oh, Erdnot Rex.
Yes, Rex.
Yeah.
I accidentally killed him.
I mean, I was always pro Garrus. I was a Garrus guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I liked. I don't know, something about him reminds me of like he's like a Saint Walker. I don't know. I liked him. So I loved every aspect of the way that these characters were being retold in a different way. The story, I don't know if it's because I've kind of been doing this IDW thing. I even liked. One of my favorite things about Gabriel Hardman is, you know how whenever we've been reading White Knight, we always praise Murphy about how great he is at drawing vehicles?
Yeah.
Well, to me, Hardman is that same kind of guy, but when it comes to like spaceships. And seeing the way that the details that he does with all spaceships, pretty much anything with machinery, and you also see that as well if you ever read the Aliens books, there's a special detail in regards to how he treats architecture and how he treats anything that has to do with engineering that going through this book, I don't know about you because I know that I am more of the darker, grittier art fan and you are more of like a cleaner, polished.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, what did you think of the art in this story?
I really dug the art because it gave the tone something that I felt needed to be there. So the story overall is the hunt of the Green Lanterns, and not in a bad way. It is Hal and Kilowog trying to find lanterns in order to save Kilowog's planet. Like, that is the ultimate goal here.
Yep.
And I know it may have felt a little lost near the end because so much stuff happens, but that is ultimately the reason why they're trying to find more lanterns. And because there seems to be, like, almost no hope, the art just looked great throughout the entire thing. Because it gave that... It wasn't supposed to be something like, oh, we're going to find all these lanterns, and we're going to go, and it's going to be fun, and it's going to be awesome. No.
Yeah, the art has that bleak look, yeah, which kind of just shows you the state of affairs, because when they do go on this journey, they realize that it's not only Kilowog's planet that needs help.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I hear you.
And one thing that I wanted to take note of, and it's very stereotypical for a, like, sci-fi, like, galaxy-broad story, of course, Earth is always the, like, young planet that doesn't know anything about the galaxy, because the Manhunters were not, you know, freaking enslaving Earth, like every other planet in the galaxy. So Hal is learning all of this, like, for the very first time. And, you know, Kilowog has the little history lesson with the lanterns, with the Manhunters, and they go off to all these different planets. Because
they keep on hearing myths,
yeah,
about the Green Lantern Corps and how they could potentially find help, and that's where you end up meeting one.
Yeah.
Well, we thought it wasn't him.
Yeah, they meet, what's her name? They meet, I can't remember her name. Oh, it's right here, actually. Man, I'm good. Her name is, jeez, what is her name?
It's the one that becomes the leader, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Crap. I don't know.
It's,
I don't remember.
It starts with an A, I know that.
We suck.
Yes, we do. I feel like we always have problems with names.
But we do.
You got it right here.
All right, just keep going with your keep going with your point. But I'll try to find it here.
One thing that
Arisia.
Yes. She comes in, you know, and she looks like she actually knows what she's doing with her ring because she actually builds constructs to hold Hal and Kilowog, and then they go looking for more because she basically says, no, I'm not going to help you. Like, we're already suffering. I don't need to go on some, you know, adventure to go get myself killed, and then these people have nobody to protect them, basically.
Yeah.
And that is basically the case everywhere else. And when they finally, because basically their rings are running low, like super low, and their actual battery is not getting a very, like, big charge. And the concept of how, like, the batteries just charge themselves after a while, and then that's how they charge their rings, is very interesting to me. I guess that's how they would always do it, because, I mean, I've never really had a story, or read a story, where they go in detail of how the battery and ring work as far as, like, charging and everything else. So I would think, you know, because they say, oh, it's going to take, like, a day or two for the battery to charge up so we can charge our rings. And basically, the energy goes out. The power goes out of the battery, of the rings. Hal is in mid-conversation when Kilowog starts speaking a completely different language. And Manhunters attack. They get separated. He gets enslaved. And that's where he finds the actual power battery, like the central power battery. And this is when I get, like, super excited, because, like, this is where Hal goes all out from everything. And we finally get to see what it was that basically brought him to space. Because there is this background story that you're getting small hints of throughout the entire thing. And you know it's bad. You know something happened that Hal was not okay with, because he even tells Kilowog, oh, I did this thing that hurt a lot of people, and it broke trust for me. So I, you know, so when Hal finally gets to the point of breaking, you know, into the central power battery and, you know, getting fully charged but still overrun by Manhunters, he, like, runs into space to, like, collect himself, and you see the basic flashbacks of all the times he was basically a coward, and he's like, no, I'm not going to be a coward anymore. That was very much a Hal moment right there. And,
yes, it was.
And I loved it. I love the broadcast. It's very simple. Very, very simple. But you see all these different lanterns around the galaxy getting it.
I was very happy when I saw Salak.
Yeah.
For some reason, when I saw Salak and he was just like, oh, this can't be possible, or you know, he said something along those lines, I thought that was a... I don't know, it's like one of those moments that I was just experiencing, like, an epic... I feel like if you put any epic Hans Zimmer score from, like, a movie, or, like, something from Lord of the Rings, like, at the end, I feel like those moments, I can kind of hear... I don't know why... I think it was the buildup of everything that Hartman was trying to do to get to this point, which was going to make Harold, like, this leader... It had a very epic feel to it, and seeing them all coming, like, at different moments, I thought it was very inspiring, and it paid off in a very, very big way.
Oh yeah, for sure. It very much did. You even have, like, the moment where it looks like Hal is about to get squashed, about to die for nothing, and Kilowog just comes out of nowhere. He's like, oh, I just needed your location. Thanks, buddy. And they start kicking ass. You get to see all the freaking lanterns come. You get to see a small cameo of Sinestro. And you kind of get a taste of who he is already when he learns, oh, well, if we destroy the planet, then we destroy the Manhunters. Yeah, let's do it. And, so, you know, the lanterns actually go back and forth on this whole idea of destroying the planet, and then there's one lantern that says, oh, well, we're a species of alien that works very hard with science, and we understand that, you know, not everybody wants to do this, so we have another plan. And so they're able to destroy the Manhunters without destroying the power battery or the planet, and that's when they go off world. They find a place to regroup, and that's when they appoint a leader, and they say, hey, we're going to be connected now, and we're going to talk to each other, and we're going to be there for each other. And they so they basically set their core values on what's going to be the Green Lantern Corps of the future, while we also see at the very end this guardian that has, you know, he is the sole survivor. We learn what he was doing in the background. And he is very angry that Hal did not listen to him and destroy the planet, because he created the Yellow Lantern.
Yes.
It's stuff like that. Like, and you can dog on the Green Lantern movie all you want. All you want. The best part of that movie, the after credits scene where Mark Strong's Sinestro puts on the yellow ring and that suit turns yellow. Best part of the movie. And
yeah, it was.
And as weird as the suits were, as weird as the movie was, then you're like, oh crap. Yes. Bring me another movie. I want to see that Yellow Lantern. I want to see him go toe to toe with Hal. And then we never got it here. We now get a tease for a Yellow Lantern Corps. Like, that got me even more pumped. Like, all the action and, like, climax of the book had already happened by this point. You know, all the, like, not all of the Manhunters, but a majority of them, because they were enslaving people for, you know, Oa. And so a majority of Manhunters died.
Yes.
So you're like, okay, the bigger threat is kind of done. We just need to kill everybody else or destroy all the other Manhunters. But seeing that there's a Yellow Lantern Corps got me, like, super riled up whenever I first read this and got reminded
again.
Yeah,
because it gives you of, like, the Sinestro Corps War.
Yes.
And it's, like, at the point right now, what made this story and what makes a sequel to this, which thanks to Scott from the DC Film Squadcast,
yes,
he mentioned that it does come at the end of the year, unless, you know, things can happen, but at the moment it is slated.
Did he say the end of the year or the end of the summer?
I don't remember. I remember end. So I don't remember.
Let me look it up real quick.
Talk. But it's one of those things like when you're looking at this book, it's funny how you felt such high stakes and there was kind of like an introduction to, like, Hardman did a really good job of just teasing you enough of how powerful and how dangerous the Manhunters were, but it's hard to have like a connection point to them because you really don't find out this. You don't really find out how dangerous the Manhunters really are. At first, they just seem like these mindless killing machines until they meet like Vex, and they meet him, which is where he tells you, no, you wanted to look for like my brother who was the Green Lantern. And he kind of gives that history lesson about what the Guardians ended up doing. And then you get that little bit of that tease when Hal does find the power battery and he has that conversation within the battery,
mm-hmm,
with the Guardian who I was curious. Do you think that's Ali Apsa?
Yes.
Ali Apsa?
Yeah. I do, and because I don't think he gave a name.
He did not.
He just said that he was a Guardian, right?
Yeah.
So I do think it's Ali Apsa, and I do think it's really funny because, of course, what would be, you know, I understand that all of this was very sci-fi and, like, dark, and there was hardly any humor. But to have that small little break where Hal was in the battery recharging his ring, and he's like, are you in the battery? And he's like, no, you idiot. How would that even be possible? And he's like, no, I'm just using the battery to project an image so that way I could talk to you.
It's very, very like Flash, like within the Speed Force, where he can kind of just travel at a time to converse, which I thought was clever as well. So man, this story was a lot of fun. I'm really happy that I was able to revisit it and that you kind of brought it up, like, hey, why don't we talk about, because when you mentioned, I was like, man, you know what? I want to read this book again, because again, I'm a big Hardman fan, so any chance I get to dive into one of his books again, and especially with these Earth One books, it's really nice, since all the current DC stuff is kind of, you know, we've been told, you know, it looks like the books are going to start coming out again, but, you know, all that stuff is in flux when it comes to...
I was going to say that, just for our listeners, it looks like May 16th. May 16th is a Tuesday, because DC has now made their books available on Tuesdays now. May 19th. May 19th is going to be the very first day we get DC books back. It is no longer going to be comic book Wednesdays for DC. It's going to be comic book Tuesdays. So they have it there on their website. If you go to dccomics.com, they do have a little thing there that says May 19th, and it has a list of books that are coming out. I believe it is like Deceased number 3.
Yep.
Deceased number 3 is there, same as a whole lot of their like big books are coming out. For this for this month.
I mean, which is fine. I mean, I think that at this point, I think a good amount of fans are just going to be happy to kind of see, you know, current continuity come back. So if at first it's in that smaller scale, I think anything at this point is a win.
Well, my co-host on Batman News Weekly made a pretty good point, saying that technically, when everything was going according to plan, when everything was still, like, on schedule, the very next week that we were supposed to get books, we were supposed to get Batman. And
okay,
Batman is not on this list. If you look for May 19th and May 26th, it's not on the list. So he believes, because how big Batman is as far as, like, their number one hero and their number one seller, he thinks that they have basically taken this time to really get their stuff together and saying, okay, Batman is always the one that, you know, steams forward in every movement. So instead of acting like everything is normal, we are wanting to step back a little bit, make sure we have all of our ducks in a row, and then push everything out. So he believes that they are going to delay Batman for just a little bit longer while they get everything situated. And Tinian may have more than just 15 issues. Because from what we hear, 5G is not exactly what we all thought it was going to be. Not anymore.
Yes, I mean, you and I, we've conversed a bit in regards to what we've been hearing. And, you know, in terms of where some of the, you know, the creativity and where the story's potentially going to go, we've also have heard some rumblings in regards to who could be potentially an architect for the, you know, the future of what DC Comics will be. It is, to a point, I believe it is exciting. If it does come out that way.
Yeah.
But again, I think everything is still up in the air, and I think at the moment right now they're just trying to work in the short term and try to figure out how do we get these books out. And once we go from there, I'll be curious. I'll be curious to see how things are going to move, because, you know, there's been a lot of times that we've seen with creators where, hey, work on this. Nope, this is on hold. So we don't really know what the plan is. What is a long-term plan? I think that right now the virus has kind of screwed a lot of things up. So I think right now it's let's just try to get these books out. If they're going to do it, let's just make sure that however they do it the right way.
True.
And then, I mean, I think, you know, creative-wise, we'll just have to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. But with that, we actually had a little bit of a short episode today.
Hey, we read a short book that was great. It was, hey, quick and good.
Yeah. And I was very surprised, because I was like, oh man, I need to read this before, you know, we actually talk about it. Because I, you know, whenever I read a book, I'm like, oh, I'm pretty confident I know that book now. But I was like, it's been like almost 2 years since I've read this book, so I want to go ahead.
I don't trust my recollection. So if I'm retouching something, I have to. For some reason, I thought Kilowog died in this.
Really?
So yeah. So when I saw that moment where it looked like he was a goner, I was like, oh man, I remember. I this is the story I told myself in my head. Man, I remember really liking Kilowog, and he died so tragically, like in the middle, which kind of propped up Hal. So then I'm like, so here I am like 2 years later reading this. I'm like, oh yeah, this is when he was gone. And then I see him sitting. I'm like, what the hell is he doing here?
Yeah.
So to me, I felt like, yeah, but that's my memory. My memory sucks.
So I just read this like yesterday morning. Like Abby was making breakfast, and I just like kind of just flew through it surprisingly fast. And it's a fun read. I highly recommend it for anybody who is trying to find something new to read who hasn't read it before.
And different from what they have read.
Yes. And I wouldn't recommend every Earth One book, just because everybody has a different taste. I've heard a lot of people are indifferent about the Batman Volume 1. And I've heard, not a whole lot of people even tried to pick up the Teen Titans. So, you know, pick them up, you know, when you think you're ready to really take that dive. I wanted to pick them up just because I had this feeling that they were going to steamroll the Earth One and then, like, make a Justice League. And I really wanted that. I really wanted to see a Justice League book come out of this. And hopefully they still plan to make more. Because at one point there was a rumor that Francis Manapul was going to take hold of an Aquaman book.
Yeah.
And right,
well, we haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything about those books in a long, long while. I hadn't heard anything about the Volume 2 of Green Lantern until Scott said something, and I just looked it up. He said later this year, so who knows.
Okay. Yeah, so when I saw Manapul, because I remember hearing that and he was going to do it, since I haven't heard anything in regard, because it kind of feels like DC has pushed into the Black Label.
Yeah.
And that's been more of their thing. For some reason, I always thought in my head that even though I know Scott was the writer of Drowned Earth, I don't know why I kind of felt like I could have envisioned that being, since Manapul was one of the main artists.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I wonder if, like, he worked with Scott and kind of gave him ideas of what his story would be. How it could potentially work. Because, again, I haven't heard from any more of these Earth One. But let's just say you have Jeff Johns. You have J. Michael Straczynski. You have Gabriel Hardman. Jeff Lemire. Grant Morrison. Who is writing the Justice League book from the writers who have currently written an Earth One book?
I would, if I was DC, I would go back to I can't even say his last name, Skrzynski.
Just say JMS. That's what I say.
JMS. I would go to JMS. Now, I remember having a conversation with him personally on Twitter, because he had announced that there was no plans for a volume 4.
Did you just cough?
Yes.
I'm logging off.
Oh my gosh.
No, I'm joking.
No, it's not Corona, right. I promise.
Good.
But
so you spoke with him?
He said there was no plans for volume 4, and the reason why he was no longer planning on writing was because he was having vision problems. Now,
okay.
And then he went dark for a very long time. Now, there is a new comic line, a new publisher out there.
Yeah, that he's kind of like headlining.
That he is headlining, and he is writing a book called Resistance. I have heard that is a very good book.
I mean, JMS is a great writer.
He is.
I mean, I know you don't like the Spider-Man stuff, but he's written my favorite Thor. He's written my favorite Spidey.
Well, I was going to say, Thor is actually, I'm trying to debate on who to start reading, because I'm about to finish a Gambit series, and I'm like, okay, I still want to read Marvel. What am I going to read next? And it's either Jason Aaron's Thor, JMS's Thor, or like a random like Captain America book. And I'm really leaning toward JMS right now.
I guess it would just depend on, do you want to read a Thor where it's not really going to be touching on anything that you could potentially tie into what's happening now and at least get to the beginning?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, starting at Aaron, you're at least going, you know, Iron Man MCU kind of thing. Like, you're starting from the beginning of what it is now.
Yeah.
If you decide to go JMS, you're kind of better off just thinking of it as an Elseworld, because, I mean, we've had 19,000 different relaunches and stuff like that. Where
true,
I mean, it's not going to connect to anything. But to me, I don't know. Yeah. And again, because of how my recollection, I mean, I don't like remember these things. I mean, I remember it being great, but again, it was like 2005. So you know, sometimes you read old comics and you're like, oh man, this just doesn't hold up.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to say it was like about a month and a half ago, I kind of revisited some of the Back in Black stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this is, and like the others, I was like, dude, this is really good. Like, this is still really good.
I'll have to go back to Back in Black because I don't know what it was back in the day when it first came out. I don't know if I really liked it, and that's why I kind of had like a sour taste whenever you were talking about it. And
because you were in love with Kirsten Dunst and you just didn't want anything to happen to MJ. I get it.
No, but I genuinely think that bringing JMS back to one of the big two and then putting him on a like a Justice League book would be huge. I just think it would be huge.
So then who would you want to draw? Do you want a Hardman Becco? Do you want a Paquette? Do you want a Gary Frank? Do you want Shane Davis? I'm forgetting who did Teen Titans. Sorry.
I think because of what we just got from Doomsday Clock, I think a Gary Frank would be awesome.
Oh my god, that would be
like JMS with modern day Gary Frank.
Oh yeah, how can I forget? Terry Dodson did Teen Titans.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he did. That's right. I love Terry for covers, not so much interior. Just because I think he puts time in his covers and he has a lot of detail. I feel like in his interiors it can get a little messy. So
I could see that.
I would say Gary Frank. I would say JMS with Gary Frank.
Man, that would be that's an orgasm to the eyes.
Just because I feel like if people were to hear, oh, Gary Frank and Geoff Johns are doing a Justice League book, people would get way too confused and be like, oh, this is connected to the main continuity. It's going to be another Doomsday sequel.
Well, that's kind of like how I feel that after, because the thing is, like, I've read Doomsday Clock so many times just because of the delays.
Uh-huh.
That I have officially, like, just connected Gary Frank to Doomsday Clock. That I feel like if I ever see his work in something else on DC, I'm just gonna feel... I feel like my eyeball continuity is going to lead me to thinking that this has a connection just because of how many times I have ingrained that story into my brain.
Nice. Nice.
And I hope that does get...
I'm still waiting for the completed... volume of Doomsday Clock.
Well, I think they're gonna sell like part two hardcover, and then after they wait a while, then they'll do like a complete omnibus kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I'm gonna end up buying all three, so it doesn't even matter. I enjoyed the story too much.
For sure.
Yeah.
Alright, guys. Well, of course we are a part of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, where you can find a plethora of different shows. Go check them out. Really good stuff. You can find me at Twitter.
You don't even know who you are.
I know. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Fanboy Clay. I also have another podcast, two actually. One is called Batman News Weekly, where you can find anywhere you listen to podcasts, as well as Fanboy Comics Podcast. I have three shows every single week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Please check those out. They've been really fun. I'm now on a rotating schedule. I read different books every single week, so that way I'm not getting bored. And, yeah. Mark, where can I find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Mark Reads Comics. And I currently don't post much because I'm doing what my Twitter handle says. I'm reading comics. No, honestly, I'm just... Yeah, that's where you can find me, and I guess... Sooner or later, I'll post things like, you know, randomly. But man, I am on such a, like, a fantasy football high and kind of, you know, the NFL draft just completed. So I'm kind of so, I never realized how much I need sports.
Mean you and Jake are going to reconnect for the football podcast?
Yeah, I think we're going to do that, but I think we're going to try to, and potentially Fred from Indie Alley, who's on the network as well.
Okay.
But I think we're, because we actually joined up with several others, I mean, I don't know if I should say his name because, you know, he's one of those, you know, Foligno, this guy.
Oh.
Jimmy. I mean, Jimmy, you know, Jimmy's a household name now. So you have to be careful when you say his name. But in terms of fantasy.
He appeared apparently on either an online stream or TV, and now he's famous. His little flash icon was, I don't know if they were doing some fantasy football thing online, but I saw somebody like take a picture of it and they're like, "Hey, I see you." And like, he was dead center. He was like actually like emblown on a screen. And I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool."
That's funny. Yeah. So, you know, he's there too. So, I mean, if one thing, I'll give you guys a secret. If Jimmy ever says something stupid, just tell him he's a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and he has nothing to celebrate. Joe Wow. Burrow can't even save that franchise. Anyways, so yeah, I've just been, I don't know, man. I just need sports in my life right now. That it's, you know, this fan between doing dynasty fantasy football and, you know, dealing with my other stuff like the draft. The draft has literally saved me.
Yeah.
I never realized that this quarantining stuff was hitting me until I've noticed that I think that not having sports, I think sports has always been like that anchor that kind of like keeps me sane,
yeah,
knowing that I'm home. So when it's not here, I think I'm feeling all those crazy things that everybody keeps talking about. But yeah, long story short, Mark reads comics.
what are you reading right now? Let's just give out some stuff that we're reading, so that way maybe some other people can read it too.
Well, I mean, we'll just finish with the Earth One. Now, I know that I teased it because I was planning on reading it at that time, but I ended up reading the first issue yesterday, which is I got the hardcover of House of X and Powers of X.
Okay.
So I'm diving into that. I mean, I'm still kind of on that House of M high.
Yeah.
But since I don't currently have like Decimation or all the other stuff, I know it's on the Marvel Unlimited. It's just for some reason I have it there, but if I'm not told to go there, I guess I'm still not used to having that app.
Yeah.
That my brain doesn't tell me to go there.
Okay.
So obviously all those books are there, but I'm still thinking about X-Men. So I wanted to kind of get into what people are talking about now. And I mean, at least the first issue, I was like, man, this is really good.
Yes.
So that's what I'm reading here. Indie, I haven't gotten into anything, currently, but again, like I think I've mentioned it on the show. I mean, I've kind of just been enjoying reading what we're doing here, but
yeah,
I've kind of taken that nice little break. But I am itching to start getting the new stuff again.
Very nice.
Yeah, so well, hopefully we get them.
Yeah. I also read Hox Pox, I think like a couple weeks ago.
Well, what is that?
House of X and Powers of Ten. Hox Pox. And I am also reading.
What the hell is this guy talking about?
I'm also diving into the Marvel Unlimited app. I am reading a 2012 Gambit series, and I am on a reading list of the Ultimate Universe. So I've read.
Are you going back into the Ultimates because of Tony?
No, I actually decided. Like one.
Well,
of,
I know you've been doing Spider-Man.
But yeah, he basically gave me the reading list, and I was wanting to, because on my Thursday show of Fanboy Comics Podcast, I do something called the Ultimate Fridays, which talks about different universes, and the only thing that is a different universe in Marvel is the Ultimate Universe. So I am reading from start to finish the Marvel Universe there. And the only other universe as far as DC is New 52, but it's so embedded in everybody's mind that that's main continuity right now. So alternate, I'm doing Injustice. So I'm reading both of those together, and I'm talking about one, and then I talk about the other on the show. So I've read 1 through 13 of Spider-Man. I've read 1 through 4 of Daredevil and Elektra. Now I have read just the Elektra book. Next, I'm going to be talking about Iron Man, or I'm going to be reading Iron Man. So there's a huge list of how it kind of goes as far as timeline, and I've been enjoying it. I've really been enjoying it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
One thing I actually did want to get back into, because I was enjoying the hell out of this universe, which was Valiant.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, Valiant, I was having a freaking blast with it. I think I've read all of, like, the two, like, when it started, because I started from the beginning, from the 2012, I think, 2011, 2012, like, relaunch.
Yeah.
I think I read all of year one. I read it in, like, 2 weeks.
That's
it was
right.
So good. Yeah, it was so good. I even purchased the Valiant was having like this really cool digital where you buy like this USB and you have everything from like 2011 to like last year.
I have that USB, but I didn't find out how to like make it work.
See, I have the USB and then I sold my house and all my comic book stuff are in boxes and I have no identity. I have this stupid pow bang like birthday tablecloth thing on my background for my teaching, just so that I, you know.
Oh my gosh! So that way you're at least somewhat cool to your students.
Yeah, because I have no personality, so I need vibrant colors. Yeah,
but yeah, Valiant is very, very cool, and I would like to go back to it.
Yeah, so that's probably gonna see. You know, I'm gonna do Hokey Pokey. Then after Hokey Pokey, I'm gonna go to Valiant.
Hokey Pokey.
Hey, well, guess what? We turned the show into 51 minutes.
Dang, awesome!
So much for a short show, suckers.
I know, for real. Oh man, they're like, get it over with already. You already talked about the book.
Yeah, that was like a 14-minute rant.
Yeah, but it's
well, hey. You never know. If Ryan Parrott listened to our show talking MMPR, maybe Harmon.
Oh, that's another thing I'm reading. I'm catching up on Power Rangers. Yeah.
See, I should do that too. I think, Clay, you just need to tell me what to read, and then I'll read. Because that's the funk. I'm in a funk, man. I'm in a funk.
I'm telling you,
have comic book art behind you. You have your little palace. I see Dragon Ball Z things to your left.
Yep.
See, you have stuff there. I don't look. This is what I have. I have a crayon piggy bank.
Hey, it is
next to me.
It is
I got nothing, man.
You have.
I got like
2 months. You have 3 months. 2 to 3 months. 2 to 3 months.
Yeah. Bro, my fortress. I'm going to. I've been like Pinteresting, whatever. Like ideas. I'm trying to figure out like what to do.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I mean, I've been having like really expensive ideas, which is not, which is not good.
You still need a pole that goes down to the garage so that way you can escape into your car like Batman.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you need it.
We're gonna do something, but you know what? let's end the show before I go on my tangents.
All right,
and we hit over an hour.
All right, guys. Well, like I said, you can find us on Twitter, Nerdy Legion Podcast. Please go ahead and subscribe and share the podcast, and we will see you guys next week.
See ya.
See ya.